Hello. Welcome back to the All Good in the Brotherhood podcast. Finally with the brother.
Yeah,
the OG brother.
The OG.
Not knocking on Tom. Love him. Super glad he's actually been a lot more regular.
He just wasn't in the first episode.
Yeah, he wasn't. I mean, he wasn't in like the first 12
episodes.
He wasn't
in the first several. Yeah, quite a while.
And
not an add-on.
And this guy hasn't been in person in way too long.
Yeah, it's been summer. It was the last time I appeared in anything. And it's been probably since spring that I was in any regularity.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a long time.
This guy's just finished his first semester of law school, which is...
I was going to say I went off to like study kung fu in Japan or China. I don't even know where he studied kung fu. Yeah, but no, it was in fact law school, not getting a black belt in kung fu, but it was super cool. So it got done with the first semester of 1L year. So they say that's the hardest, or at least that 1L in general is the hardest, but... it's in the book, so it wasn't that terrible.
Is that what they call it? 1L, 2L, like
3L, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's what actually they call it in seminary. It's 1T, 2T, 3T, 4T.
For theology?
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, yeah.
T4, T1. So, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm T4, one semester left of it.
Something like military designation.
Yeah, then I'll be ordained a priest, which is crazy. 5 months, basically. Just over 5 months and counting.
That's pretty hype. How do you feel about knowing that, especially since you've thought about priesthood since you were a kid?
Oh yeah, no,
how does it feel to be in the home stretch?
It's so, yeah, exciting is the word. A little bit, not terrifying. I'm certainly not terrified, but a little like unnerving of like all of this weight of responsibility will now just
it's
be instantly thrust
on
my shoulders, and yet I also feel truly ready, like, and you know, which like I as an ordained deacon we really hope I am.
That's not a guarantee.
It doesn't have to be, but what I think has really proved that to me, or helped me feel that security and resolution, has been my parish ministry, which we did an episode recently with Tyler Fitzgerald. If you haven't checked that episode, you can see he and I talk about our deacon experiences. But just doing that weekly ministry in the parish, and I've even gone a couple times when I didn't even have to go just because of how much I loved it. So
dude, that's sick. I think couples should be required to have some experience babysitting like a whole family together while they're engaged.
That's actually a smart
idea. while they're married but still expecting, or before they have their first baby, because I hear so many couples be like, we walked out of the hospital with our first kid and thought, oh my gosh, we're responsible for taking care of a human being. You don't get any instruction manual, but like having a deacon equivalent where you kind of get some trial by fire in a lower stake environment would maybe be cool. But that's super cool. You've gotten to experience pastoral life.
Yeah. Which, and especially like pastoral life versus like monastic community life is very different, because at least in the parish, everyone so far, right? And I'm not the priest, so I'm sure this will change.
You get heat.
But like just everyone is so like encouraging and affirming.
Welcoming.
Everyone's so nice.
Yeah.
This last weekend I preached, and I had like a dozen people ask, like, can I get a copy of your homily? So, and which I just can expect that like the more homilies I preach, the less that would be the case.
For sure. Yeah.
And then comparing that to the community life, which love the monks, they're not the most encouraging group of individuals, because we all live together and we see the other sides of each other. It's like living in a big family.
Yes. That's true. It is the holiday season, is it not?
What is it?
The holiday season.
It is the holiday season.
Happy or blessed Advent.
Blessed Advent. And depending on when you're listening to this, Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
I will never say happy holidays. You know, actually, I heard that they're trying to retcon the word Christmas tree now to call it holiday tree, because they still the word Christmas
it's
in
like
it.
It's like Turkey Day for Thanksgiving, but worse. Oh, that's so abominable. I hate that. It's crazy because, I was down in D.C., where I'm studying law school, and I was just driving back from the grocery store, actually, and you know, a lot of small towns have decorations in Christmas time. They put up wreaths along the along telephone poles, and they put up lights and stuff. But it's funny, in this small town, it's like a suburb of DC where I live, there was no real decorations, very minimal.
That's
except
so sad.
For on the side of this one street, there are just these banners that say Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa, happy Christmas and happy New Year. And it's just like hitting all, like covering it all.
All exclusive.
Every single possible person.
Inclusive, and it's like, I guess.
You don't even need to do that. We live in it. Everyone who lives in the town is Hispanic in the little town that I live in. So it's like, you could just say Merry Christmas or Feliz Navidad.
Feliz Navidad.
You cover everybody. It's not like there's a whole lot of diversity, really.
Huh.
But it's just so cringe. It's like, it struck me because it was so joyless. It's like these bland looking banners just trying to cover all their bases and offend nobody. And I thought, like, man, this is just really lame. So yeah, no happy holidays here. Merry Christmas.
In
advance and blessed Advent. But the reality is, during the holiday season,
mm-hmm.
which is a real thing, you can call it holiday season.
Yeah, absolutely. There are lots of holidays.
Right? Yeah. Exactly.
Holy day.
Right. And New Year's and all the sort of things that gather families together. There are moments where you're going to be with your siblings or be with extended family or be with, you know, that new in-law or whoever, that are bound to be source of great joy and to all a good night and to all a Merry Christmas and all that. But sometimes it happens. It's not an unheard of phenomenon that when families get together, especially ones that haven't seen each other for a while or maybe have somewhat different beliefs on things, or they're starting to grow apart.
Like that stereotypical Thanksgiving dinner.
Exactly.
It just like slowly implodes in on itself.
You got your woke Starbucks cousin, your crazy conspiracy theory uncle, and then like your little kid who doesn't know what's going on in Palestine. You got like, that's always a political example, but in general, no matter what it is, holidays bring together family members that don't always get along, or maybe just the fact that they all are together, they realize like, oh yeah, it's this,
you annoy me,
yeah, I'm really annoyed. So that's just a common experience in the holiday season,
and it's a common experience in the monastery outside of the holiday season and in it, but because we're living together all the time,
for sure.
And
oh yeah.
And so that's
for sure, dude.
something to, yeah, I'm getting it.
Familiarity breeds contempt.
Yep.
Yeah, dude, big time.
And so this, yeah. Just all of that made me think of something my novice master, and this is something I kind of want to like talk about, is when I first entered the monastery, Father Joe is my novice master, which I think I've talked about before, but like former military, army dude, chaplain,
total hoss,
like 6'2", just like beefcake guy. It's like a unit. That's what everyone calls him, Father Joe, the unit. So, when I entered the monastery, like, I think the first day of the novitiate, he said, you know, a really important like principle or like image to live by in regards to the monastery is seeing it as a rock tumbler. And a rock tumbler is basically, it's a small or large device, you know, whatever, mixer thing, where rocks with sharp edges are put in together with like a mixture of like water, and like sand, some kind of like coarse material.
Abrasive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they're mixed around, and the abrasive material and the rocks in there together, along with the water, just like like erosion. It's like basically how to make erosion happen really, really quickly.
Very cool.
And so the rocks are hitting off each other, and what's the end result? But you get a bunch of smooth, polished stones.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
And so it's like a way to take like all these jagged rocks and then they make them pavers, you know, so you can
make
a stone pavement.
Well,
like
that's how we get those nice rocks, dude. I'm always wondering where they're pulling these things.
So he said, entering the monastery is like your rock getting thrown into the tumbler with all of the other monks' rocks. We all enter in with a bunch of sharp edges, some people with a lot more sharp edges than others, and our whole life is just being slowly churned into that smooth rock to become a paver, not to become like a perfect rock ourselves, become literally a paver for the next monk to walk just a little bit closer on the road of holiness, for his future. So I'm not just becoming holy for my sake, I'm also coming holy for the community. And yet the means for holiness isn't just like doing all like the prayer and the devotion.
Yeah.
It's literally living in the friction of the community and letting and allowing like the things that annoy us, the people that annoy us,
mm-hmm.
to not be things that we disregard, but ones that we accept as a means to sanctification. So what he said is like, everyone in this monastery will contribute to your holiness, whether they're trying to or not, whether they mean to or not, and whether you like it or not. So kind of in the spirit of the holiday season,
so
in anticipation of potential family strife, friction, or just at work or in school. I know you said there's a lot of people in your classes that annoy the heck out of you.
None of them are going to watch this. I mean, I don't even know them.
But like, how do we approach things that annoy us in a way that contributes to our holiness rather than contributes to like our own degradation.
Well, that's really good because definitely there is that risk. Like we might say, oh, we're striving for patience. And so, you know what? I can just be patient with this relative or this coworker, whoever it is that we're in tension with. But you also have to recognize the fact that, yeah, if you're in that state of tension, you're going to be in a state of erosion, like you're describing. Mm-hmm. And erosion doesn't feel good. And sometimes you need to know your limits and be like, okay, I might want to be this ideal, perfect form of patience, but I'm really not there yet. Yep. Sometimes you need to know when to step away. It might be in literally a meal if there's a conversation going on and you think, wow, I want to lose it in conversation with this relative. Maybe you just need to literally step away. Sometimes it's not stuff that dramatic, though. It might just be little pet peeves that, especially during the holidays, you get reminded of if you're with somebody or in the orbit of somebody that you kind of forgot what it was like to be around them. Mm-hmm. And you're now maybe painfully reminded. So I think one thing, though, to do is, yeah, acknowledge that there is a potential for erosion and that doesn't feel good, the kind of erosion you're talking about. Number two, acknowledge that something good can come out of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
That very experience in that, yeah, there's an opportunity for growth for yourself as long as you're doing it in a healthy way and not going so extreme that you're going to, you know, blow your top. But number three, it might sound trite, but try to recognize the good in the other person and be like, okay, look, they might, I don't know, maybe you're having a meal with somebody you haven't seen in a long time and you get reminded, wow, they chew with their mouth open. Or just something like that's a pet peeve. To have a little bit of humility and also charity and just look past that and be like, all right, it's not that big a deal. Let's just focus on it's so good to be with this person again.
What if it never feels like it's good to be with them, though? Like that. I want you to reflect on that for a minute. While I do agree with the things that you're saying.
Yeah.
It is not my responsibility to do an examination of conscience for someone else.
Sure.
And so be like, okay, well, they're a judgmental person, or they're always seeming to be stirring the pot, or they're just like always in a bitter mood. And think like, well, I don't do those things. Or even if I do, I try to like check myself. This person doesn't seem to. So recently, my spiritual director, I was talking to him about someone that annoys me. And he was saying some similar things that you were saying. But he also said, you know, sometimes we get angry or annoyed with people because we see them getting away with things we no longer allow ourselves to get away with.
Yeah.
And we almost like get repulsed by the immaturity or the lack of self-awareness that this person has.
That's true, yeah.
And he said, does not become our job to tell this person, by the way, you're immature or you're not aware of yourself, right? It's rather to model those things in a better way without thinking I'm modeling this so that they change. It's rather I'm modeling this because I know.
Because it's the right thing to
exactly.
do. You know it is. And
yeah.
hope, you. I think it's okay to hope that
it would affect
see
it.
Your example, but and, not that it, that be the only reason.
And he said, and you know what? Yeah. If this person wasn't there doing that, would you be reminded of staying true to yourself?
Yeah.
You know, like let's say right. like patience, right? Patience, humility, a big, I guess, I don't know if I call it a virtue. I think a virtue, but of acceptance has been like a really big thing I've been working on this year. Acceptance of people as they are, situations as they are, myself as I am. And he said, you know, if you don't have these people like reminding you of that, would you still do it?
Right.
You know, so, but yeah, what about being around someone who it's almost impossible to be around? How can we approach sanctity in that regard? Or what's sanctifying about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, I guess you just pray to God that the moments pass quickly and that soon you can be back on the road and say, hasta la vista to that person for another year. No, that's a good question. Yeah, because there are people that, yeah, there's some people that rub you the wrong way a little bit. Then there's other people that just, they grate on you. And mm-hmm. it's like, man, like this is just, you feel like you're in a blender. Just being around their presence, you're like, wow, I'm just in torment right now. This is alleviating me of so much purgatory time. and I think, well, it's hard. Because there's going to be a situation where there's no escape from that. I would say if there is opportunities to kind of step away,
mm-hmm.
You know, go for a walk, find something to distract yourself from that, that'd be good. But if there's no opportunity, if you're like, okay, say you're at a very small social gathering and it's just you and this other person talking. Well, maybe try to understand them. Like, if you're having a conversation with them, try to understand why they are the way they are. And what I mean is, like, lean into into your own recognition that they're annoying. So, okay. So if say you're like, dang it, like, why do they talk like this? Like, maybe the way they talk is annoying. Then ask them questions about, like, yeah, so what are your thoughts on this or that in ways that could nudge towards a conversation about trying to get a sense of why they carry themselves the way they do, why they talk the way they do, why they do their habits the way they do. Ask about their routines, ask about their lives, try to learn more about them. Because honestly, number one, this is good because often
people love talking about themselves.
People love talking about themselves. So it at least will make them enjoy hanging around with you, even if you don't feel the same way. But also, love is proportional to knowledge. And if you want to be able to love another person more and be able to be more accepting and finding joy, even with maybe their quirks, then you should try to know them a little bit more. But especially if you can, navigate ways so that you can know a little bit more about why they're acting the way they're acting right now. For all you know, say they're doing something or they're expressing themselves in a way that's really frustrating, and maybe there's something rough going on in their life and you don't know about that. So, like, it's good to find that out so that you can have a little bit of sympathy. That's kind of vague.
So I follow and I accept. I think, like, I would generally, that would be my approach. But to kind of continue to play the devil's advocate here.
Yeah.
What if the things you find out about them make it even more ridiculous about, like, the
give me examples. We're kind of talking vague terms.
Yeah. Okay. So
there must be people you're thinking of.
Okay. So yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean,
you don't need to name people, no, but I'm just saying, okay, give me the kind of actions or.
Okay. So someone who just, they dominate the conversation all of the time.
Okay.
Right. Whenever there's a group of people.
Yes. Okay.
They clearly got to make themselves the center of attention. And it's not just that they're dominant conversation. It's that the point of conversation is about them.
Yeah.
Like, they're always talking about what they do or what they say or what they think, what they feel. And the I comes out like 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so as I, like, explored it with this person, I think there's insecurity there of, like, trying to make themselves, like, heard, and they felt ignored in the past. I'm like, okay, I can. Yet when I've offered, like, oh, well, maybe instead of, like, always leading with I statements, like, that could sound a little selfish or that could sound a little arrogant. The response is like, there's no way in which that's arrogant. Like, I don't see how, like, I just don't see arrogance in myself at all.
This is actually happening in a conversation.
I'm extrapolating from a conversation.
Yeah, okay.
So this isn't actually exactly how it went.
Right.
It actually went in a good way. But good. What if it went the other way?
The other way,
you know? It's like, oh, I don't see that at all, you know? Or like, I think you're the problem here. Like, I, you know, so immediately flip it.
Right.
Or if they said, well, you know, I think my opinion is better than everyone else's. I think I'm right. And everyone needs to know that.
Yeah.
The rationale that they give would make me even more annoyed now. It's like, oh, okay, so not only do you talk to everybody yourself, you talk about yourself because you think you're better than everyone else, like, to prove to me. Now, that's...
Yeah.
Can you ever get that level of conversation? I don't know. And I don't know, like, if people are going to be that honest or if that's true.
Yeah.
You know, that seems, like, pretty extreme.
Yeah, I think that is extreme.
What if people are just rude? They're rude for no reason.
Yeah.
And no matter how much you try to understand them, they would just continue to be rude.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with calling people out sometimes in friendly ways. And you don't have to, like, I don't think you have to spend days and months and years intimately with someone before you can do that, if depending on what they're doing. So, give you an example, if someone's actually just being outright rude and say you were to, in a gentle way, kind of call that out, be like, hey, that was kind of rude. Like, that's kind of a wild thing to say, man. And if they were to, you know, back off, many people will back off. Many people's rudeness is genuinely, or what comes across as rudeness is generally just lack of self-awareness. So sometimes you just give a little bit of warning to someone in a conversation, they're like, they back off. But if it really is coming from mean-spiritedness, and you can detect that from, you know, follow-up or saying like, hey, that was kind of a wild thing to say, and like, well, that's just how I feel, like, well, they can suck it. And then they double down and they continue to be rude, or in subsequent conversations, they keep being even more rude. Then just, like, tell them, like, dude, you're being an idiot right now. Like, what the heck is wrong with you? Nobody else is acting like that. Like, call people out. The other thing I'd say, and, like, honestly, that can be embarrassing. You could shut the person up. And then, like, sometimes it can be awkward for a little bit, but then things chill out. And then eventually they'll, if they, you know, if they were the confident enough person that they felt comfortable being rude, they'll get over it pretty soon. Mm. The other thing is, the other example you gave where somebody is asserting opinions really strongly, it's because they just think, well, I'm right and everyone else is wrong. Sometimes dealing with those kind of people, we can be frustrated because they're the ones saying it. But like inwardly, many of us think that about our own beliefs. Like, sometimes we just need to have humility and be like, all of us, in some regard, probably think we're better than everyone else.
There's at least one aspect of everyone's lives.
Yeah.
And I'll speak for just myself.
Yeah.
There's an aspect of my life that I do genuinely think I'm better than everyone else.
Exactly. And even if it's the sheer, very general aspect of people probably made suggestions on how you should live your life. And regardless, you're living a life the way you think you should.
Yeah.
So like, at its core, we all are slight narcissists. And so when people show that, yeah, it can rub us the wrong way. But really, I think it rubs us the wrong way often if we're being honest with ourselves, because we kind of feel the same way. And so it's not just
someone. It seems unfair that
they're more comfortable and confident asserting what everyone else is maybe quietly thinking.
So then how does that, so to kind of swing it back to like the rock tumbler example.
Yeah.
How are their sharp edges actually smoothing mine down in those regards? So I pose that because I also have an answer.
Yeah, then go for it.
So like in the monastery, in monastic life,
right?
I wouldn't say that there are tons of examples or opportunities in which it's like maybe that brusque or that obvious, but it's like the more the subtle annoying things, right? Yeah. This guy just, he can't be quiet during prayer. He's always like making noise, like, rah, rah, you know, or
you told me about
laughing out loud in the middle of a silent meal when like, and then this same person gets annoyed when we tell him to shush, as if it's our fault, or that like the silence is like something that we shouldn't do, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, we have reading at dinner, and then as soon as it's done, some people are like, oh, I hate that reading. Like, why do we? It's like, well, the abbot picked that.
Yeah.
Or people complaining about the food. It's just like people complain about the food all the time, right? Or just little character, you know.
Well, you may need to recognize there's a reason why you are living in a building of all single men.
Well,
there might be some reasons why some of them are single.
So, anyways, what I'm saying is, no, you're right.
Maybe no one else found them bearable either.
The thing that I have recognized as far as like the friction that I think has actually improved my own like spiritual life,
yeah,
has been the recognition of cynicism.
Oh,
like when I've seen people's cynicism, and then I was like so blind to it in myself, like how I was very cynical when I first joined the community,
sure.
Especially very quickly when I realized like, oh wow, that's not the way I thought it was going to be. These people are way like worse than I thought.
Disillusioned.
Yeah, very quickly.
Sure.
And so I became a strong cynic. And I'm also a very sarcastic person. So I would like, I hide my cynicism in my sarcasm.
Oh yeah.
And it kind of looks like I'm just joking when most of the time I'm actually being very, very serious.
Yeah.
I was called out by one of my close friends who said, like, you know, you're not really like you were the way when you first got here.
Hmm.
Like something changed and I don't like it.
Yeah.
And I realized just because I had kind of taken on the very things that I criticized in other people. And then when I started recognizing it more, I started becoming aware, like, wow, I don't want to turn into like, you know, like an angry young man turns into an angry old man.
Yeah.
A cynic young man turns into a cynic old man. Like, I don't want to become that.
Yeah.
Not in the kind of like, oh, they're worse than me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't want to be that. So I need to work on myself. Like focusing on working on them is not like, I need to work on myself.
Yeah.
And by doing so, like becoming less cynical.
The other things bothered you less?
Yeah. I'm actually way less bothered by the things that I used to think were like reasons for me to get mad at people.
Yeah.
That like, because I can rationalize any grudge as long as I want to keep it around.
Yeah.
And as soon as I have worked on like the acceptance of people as they are, man, that, to me, that's been a real key for like, a lot of more of like a peace and a serenity and a freedom. An acceptance of they are does not mean, oh, you all should just stay that way. Right?
Yeah, how does acceptance that blend with fraternal correction?
Yeah, no, is I accept that right now this might be you at your best capacity.
Yeah.
But that does not mean that is your best capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So I have asked the abbot, like, okay, how do I like fraternally correct people? And he said, you know, he said, if it's in a moment, especially if it's them chastising another brother, or them saying something rude about someone outside the community,
sure,
or they're just complaining. Benedict says murmuring is the greatest threat to a monastery, complaining.
Hmm.
So the abbot said, he said, you don't have to say much. Just say, are we really contributing to communal living by doing this?
He said, simple.
Just ask that. And if they get all like, rah, 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 then just say, well, I want you to know that I am going to speak to the abbot. He said, you can drop my name as much as you want.
You don't even have to go talk to me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And he said, and some people are like, oh, you're going to go tell on the abbot? And you go like, yeah.
Well, that's yeah, my, that's it is our job. Community. Yeah.
But he said, but most people, when you actually say like, is this really contributing to communal living? Or you say like, I'm going to say to the abbot, they'll kind of like wake out of their stupor and be like, okay, even if it's begrudgingly, they'll recognize that you're probably right.
Yeah.
Or even if they want to admit you're right, they'll at least recognize that they should stop what they're doing.
Yeah, man. There's a lot there that's really good. I think the one point that stood out to me is the idea that you really despise in other people any of the traits that you still are trying to work through in yourself,
mm-hmm,
or that you hate in yourself. So I think this goes both ways. So when it comes to loving other people, as you see a little bit in Aristotle and Thomas Aquinas talk about this, we love in others good that often something, we find in ourselves.
Yes, and that's not narcissism. That's familiar.
Exactly. That's just like there's a healthy, very natural love of self that is just in all creatures. And it should be there. Because we exist and existence is good and beautiful and we should love it. So we love our own existence. And when we see something in another person that's sort of a reflection of an existence that we can relate to, mm-hmm, we love that. The converse of that, though, is if there's a part of ourselves that's wounded or that is tending towards imperfection or sinfulness or any evil or perceived evil, we hate that part of ourselves, even if we don't recognize it, even if we're kind of in denial. We do hate that part of ourselves, especially if we're in denial and some issue of our life that we're not dealing with yet. So then what we'll do is then we see any symptom of that same issue in someone else and we really hate it. It rubs us the wrong way because it's something that we know is already present in our own lives. It's kind of like, and I mean, the irony of that is you can wind up becoming exactly the kind of thing, like you said, that you detest.
Yep.
Isn't there a line from Star Wars, like, become the very thing is sought to destroy?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But this happens in the play Oedipus Rex, right? Where Oedipus Rex is, for those who don't know, who are maybe only familiar with the term Oedipus complex, let's not worry about that. But don't date your mom, guys. But Oedipus basically gets this prophecy when he's a young man that he's going to kill his dad and marry his mom. And he's living in this city with people who he thinks are his parents. So he's terrified. He's like, well, I'm really angry. I'm going to be super proactive. I'm going to guarantee that prophecy does not come true. He gets really angry, really, like I said, active, and decides, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to guarantee that prophecy doesn't come true. I'm going to leave the city where my father and mother live. So he leaves the city. He goes traveling. And then he encounters a man during his travels who he ends up killing. And then he goes to a city where there's a widowed queen, and he ends up marrying her. Little did he know, the original parents, or people he thought were his parents, were actually just his foster parents.
Yeah.
And in his travels now, he's ended up killing the man who was his true father and marrying the woman who was his true mother. And so, all that to say, if Oedipus had basically just taken in the prophecy that was a little bit troubling and said, okay, that's a risk that could happen, but I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not going to let it bother me. I'm not going to fret. If he had just remained in the city, he never would have gone traveling. He never would have killed his dad. He never would have married his mom. But precisely because he said, oh my gosh, I'm terrified that this is going to happen. I hate this possibility for my future. Therefore, I need to do something about it. I'm desperate. He acted out of fear. Because of that, he fled and ended up becoming exactly the thing that he feared most. And so I think we can do that with our own vices where like this will happen, honestly, with this can happen with friends, acquaintances, even sometimes people in our family when we see some flaw and we're like, oh man, or someone older than us. You see like some middle-aged dude and we look at them and we're like, oh my gosh, that's the sort of thing I don't want to become. We're all bound to become middle-aged and we're both men, so we're doomed in that regard. But like something about a person that we're like, I do not want that to become my reality. If we act out of fear and do so in such a such a way that's similar to Oedipus and go so far, we can sometimes wind up becoming exactly the thing we feared.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think there's some need for when we perceive something annoying in somebody else to just be like, okay, I'm not going to let this get out bent out of shape. Because say the other person's being rude or cynical.
Mm-hmm.
And if we get ourselves too bent out of shape, we might become rude, cynical people.
Yeah.
So sometimes to be like, wow, I really don't like that negative trait. So I'm going to work hard to not let it bother me so that I myself don't take on that same trait.
And so there's two things that I think can contribute to that. Not letting it bother me.
Yeah.
I could just say, oh, well, don't let it bother you.
Yeah, that doesn't.
Don't let it bother me. And that's like.
It's like saying, don't worry, man. Yeah, it's like, exactly. Wow, I never thought of that.
Really, really needed that.
Super helpful. Yeah.
So there are two things that I think can contribute to actually not worrying about it.
Okay.
One is whatever the recognized flaw or defect in someone else that maybe you recognize in yourself or you just don't want to, you know, attach to.
Yeah.
Is to actively start practicing whatever is the opposite virtue. So if it's rudeness,
life, yeah.
Then compassion and kindness. If it's cynicism, then gratitude.
Yeah.
You know, and you can choose to practice that. You can't make the person,
right.
But you can choose to do it. And then guess what? When you live virtuously, those same things will not be as they won't seem as problematic and annoying to you. And you'll probably be able to see in that person, like, maybe where some of those seeds are for those virtues, but which they're not allowing themselves to grow. And you can do something about that, or you can invite them to it. The other is, and this is something a priest told me in confession, because I was talking about judging other people and being getting very easily angered over very small things. And how sometimes like certain, and I'll be honest, certain monks come to the choir, I'm just like, oh man, that guy, you know? And he said, you know what? He said, you're not allowed to think that again until you have spent time praying for that person.
Yeah.
Because it's way harder to dislike someone that you've actually actively spent time praying for.
Mm.
And to pray for the things, he said, that you don't want them to have. So it's like, you don't want like health, like friends, flourishing, whatever you would kind of hope that they don't have.
Yeah.
Pray you need to that. Pray for them.
Yeah.
Because if love is willing the good of the other,
yeah.
Then whatever feelings I'm having that would say I don't want them to have at least one good,
mm-hmm.
whether it's friendship or success or attention or affirmation or love,
right.
Then I'm saying I don't will their good.
Yeah.
And if I'm not willing the good of the other, then I have no ground in which to stand on to correct them.
Again, you're kind of a claim symbol whenever you go
exactly.
to correct them. Yeah.
Or getting annoyed by them is super not fair.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, I get annoyed by you who I don't care about.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy.
Right, yeah.
Yet, I do that all the time, you know?
Exactly. And if you haven't taken on a role of true charity and you're at a place of genuine holiness, your so-called fraternal correction is just going to be the blind leading the blind.
Yeah.
And like as Jesus says, if a blind man leads another blind man, they both fall into a pit,
mm-hmm.
right? If we have a bunch of, if the church is made up of a bunch of people who are just deeply corrupt, getting frustrated with each other and with each other's corruption and trying to tell them, well, you shouldn't do this, meanwhile living in a hypocritic state, then kind of we're all doomed because,
mm-hmm.
but instead, yeah, you need to let your fraternal correction be the fruit of your own growth and virtue. Not that you have to be perfect, because it's also not to say like, oh, before you ever help someone else towards holiness or encourage someone else to change, you need to be like totally put together. Because guess what? That's never going to happen.
No, yeah.
And you can't wait until you're so-called perfect to begin trying to evangelize your own brothers and sisters in the faith. But yeah, you should at least be at a stable enough point that your encouragement is genuinely not flowing out of just hatred of them or hatred of yourself,
mm-hmm.
But it truly is coming out of, kind of an outflowing of your prayer for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like you should be praying for them and praying for them often enough, having them in your mind in a very positive way, in a way that where you're willing they're good, and then naturally because of that, you know, you end up speaking to them, say one-on-one, and saying like, hey, I see great potential in you. Maybe this is a way where like. Especially if it's a trait that you know yourself could grow in.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, hey, this is something I'm trying to grow in. I just want to say, like, maybe there are some ways that you could grow too, and here are things that have helped me. Maybe they could help you too, whatever it is. But we're kind of getting into, like, the deep spiritual stuff, but even, like, with low-key pet peeves and, like, just household stuff with families.
Yeah.
Like, kind of where we started.
Yeah, so
like,
we're
just
really
holidays,
strong on the monastic half of this. Yeah. But like, okay, so maybe like, I mean, I can think about times in like our family.
Yeah,
where like tension
some
was
stories,
like rant. Okay, well, right before I do that,
we found ones that were more than rant. We found ones that were like, borderline atomic, but.
Yeah, and we can get to that. I just want to real quick, when you were talking about like charity with correction, it just kind of made me think about how like the necessity for truth and charity to always be together.
Yeah.
Because like if I correct you in truth, but with no charity, then I've weaponized the truth. Hmm. If I correct you with charity, but with no truth, which would be to say like, oh, like it's okay. Like, you know, then I have like belittled love.
Mm-hmm.
But if
it's a false charity.
Yeah.
Right.
But if I give truth with love, it would be because I care about you. I want you to like be better.
Mm-hmm.
And truth of charity also recognizes I am sure, and I know that I have things that rub people the wrong way.
Yeah.
And that I hope that someone would know that they can come and correct me.
Right.
But if I'm not charitable, then, you know, because then a fear of correcting other people is that, oh, they're going to hate me or they're going to reject me or they're going to blow up at me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, that's also on them.
Yeah.
You can at least be someone who other people know, I could actually go and correct Nate or I could go and correct Brother Francisco because I know he'll actually receive it because they want to work on themselves.
Right.
But, okay, so yeah, so family, you got any?
I'm sure you do. I haven't thought of anything just yet.
So talking about the holidays.
Okay.
Anyways, man, I don't know. Do we?
Hey, man, we're not gonna trash talk anybody over our podcast. But I mean, if there's some relatively chill memory you have, go.
Well, that's what I'm trying to sort through some of these.
We've had some wild ones.
While
you're thinking, I could say something.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
So one thing I think that is really important in family dynamics in rubbing each other the wrong way is. If we're honest with ourselves, I think sometimes we do it willfully, right? Like we know the we know the pet peeves
buttons,
or the things we could say that are going to push the other person's buttons. And C.S. Lewis actually talks about this in the Screwtape Letters, where he says you can create a domestic situation in which each member of the household is pushing each other's buttons, basically, and they're doing it in a very conscious and purposeful way, but they're doing it in sort of a sly way where they can act innocent. So
yeah,
I can do exactly the thing that I know is going to tick you off.
Which she does very well.
But then I can do it in a way that was sort of low-key, sort of seemed innocent. Or maybe you're just, maybe Sam was just taking things out of proportion, blowing things out of proportion. Enough so that then I can get upset if he actually reacts.
Yeah, surprised. It's like,
whoa.
What? Like, how could you be so dumb? Like, why would you act that way?
Just how could be so sensitive,
angry.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
C.S. Lewis, I think the words he uses are, if I would paraphrase, are doing things with the express intention of the other person taking offense and then being grieved and angered when offense is taken.
Yeah.
So I do exactly what I want to do. I try to offend you. I try to tick you off. But then when you actually react in a way that calls me out for ticking you off, I'm like, whoa, 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 chill out.
Yeah.
And then it doubles my own anger. And that, you know, increases yours. And it's this really fun back and forth dynamic. And we can all do that to each other. If you really watch it happen, especially between spouses, I see this all the time with spouses. If you watch, or people, you know, I don't want to call it particularly husbands and wives, but particularly just people that have to live with each other day in and day out, they become absolute masters, absolute black belts at knowing how to push the other person's buttons.
Yep.
They know precisely the key weapon that they can use to just ruin the other person's, not their whole day, but just their moment. Just ruin their moment and then act innocent. Like, oh, well, I'm going to say this to you. And then you say like, well, there was a tone. Be like, what do you mean there's a tone? And then the other person's like, well, what do you mean I was a tone? That's a gaslighting. You're like, well, no, you're gaslighting me. It's like, it's an incredible dynamic. So yeah. Now that I bought you some time, do you have any thoughts or any?
See, the problem is my mind's still stuck on this one story that I do not think is like necessarily fair.
Was this Christmas 2018?
Yeah, it's not fair to the whole family
yeah,
to tell that one.
That's super fair. That was more than a little pet peeve. But the lesson being that there can be a great deal of strife.
Being by not sharing any of the story. I mean, there was. Oh, and actually, okay. So one more point is.
And what a stupid reason. We literally went to see The Last Jedi, which was the worst Star Wars movie ever made.
Yeah, that caused so much conflict.
It caused so much conflict because horrendous. Absolutely horrendous.
There were other things, too. But
who are your top three favorite Jedi?
Like, at all?
Yeah, period, yeah.
Obi-Wan Kenobi. Can we include, like, non-canon? I mean, yeah, Disney.
For sure,
canon.
Bro.
Yeah, Disney Obi-Wan Kenobi. Revan.
Spawn of the Devil. Okay, Revan.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And
it's a good call, actually, yeah. Full. Did he go back to the light side?
He did.
Okay, that's sick.
And then...
Oh, wait, that's the whole point of the OG game.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Knights of the Old Republic. If you haven't ever played it, it's from 2003. It's an old...
Mine 5, I think.
Oh, okay. Is it that old? Okay.
Yeah.
Or that new.
Super fun
actually,
game.
That's 2 decades.
Actually, talk about Christmas. We played that game.
We used to play a lot of Star Wars related games during Christmas. That and the Force Unleashed, bro. Remember that?
Yeah,
we had Force Unleashed on the Wii. We used to do Christmas time, like one-on-one battles against each other. It was so fun. Okay, keep going. Sorry.
Okay, so yeah, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Revan, and then. Maybe Plo Koon.
Okay. That's a good take.
Yeah. Like, Plo Koon through the Clone Wars became, like, super cool.
Clone Wars are really the only opportunity where you get to see, like, a lot of the Jedi in action. Like, otherwise, you go based off the movies. That most of them are blank.
It's Obi-Wan.
It's just Obi-Wan's the only interesting person. And Mace Windu's just a hothead. and really despicable. But, is there any, like, underrated one if you would think of?
You know who I didn't mention is Ahsoka.
What a turnaround, dude. From
she
from
actually
when
has become,
started being like, who is this?
And Kanan and Ezra.
Yeah. Oh, Kanan Jarrus and
Ezra Bridger. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think underrated though. I don't know. I don't know if I can think of like underrated.
That's fair.
But. I mean, there's some, like, Sindreling.
Yeah,
like,
he's cool.
I don't really know him.
He appears in one scene of the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Goated.
Who's the... Never mind, I was going to...
No, go for it.
No, I was going to ask something, and then I realized it's not actually a question, so...
I got you. Is Baby Yoda or Grogu, whatever his name is he a Jedi?
At least not.
Is there more
yet.
Mandalorian?
Their Mandalorian Grogu is a movie coming out.
Oh, that's gonna be horrible.
Because they canceled all the rest of the seasons because they're dumb.
Oh, probably because Lizzo was in the third season. That'll ruin any show. You bring Lizzo in, and who was the other guy? Jack Black. Jack Black showed up.
They really screwed up season 3.
Disney screwed up everything. What's it like? I don't know. It'd be like, yeah. It would be like if you told someone, oh, I'm going to make you a smoothie. And it just like, it was just rocks and dirt and filth and just stuff from the sewer. And you're like, no, this trust me, this is a smoothie. And you're like, I mean, okay. And then you like, take a sip. And you're like, no, this is filth. I guess they had like a couple shows. Well,
Mandalorian season 1 and 2 is pretty good.
Mandalorian 1 and 2, phenomenal. And then the one about the dude from Rogue One.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called.
What
is it called?
Andor.
Yes. Okay.
That show is phenomenal.
So I've heard. I still actually haven't seen more than like a couple episodes.
Oh, dude, the whole second season is just
really
so good.
I've been binging Stranger Things lately.
Really?
Yeah. It was during finals week of.
Oh, that's a great way to spend finals week.
I know.
Law
right?
school.
I was like, wow, it was so dangerous. One night when I think I had a final the next morning. And I mean, to be fair, I'd done tons of studying already, but I was like, okay, I'm just going to go back to my house and study. I was debating like, should I study my house or should I study at the law school? I was like, I just need to be at my house for a little while tonight because I've been grinding so hard. So I went back to my house and I was like, shoot, I mean, I've been studying pretty hard. So I pop on an episode of Stranger Things. And then what do you know? Netflix has that crazy little function where it says, like, if you want to play next episode, and only gives you 3 minutes or 3 seconds to exercise any form of willpower. I was like, shoot, I lack agency. So there you go. Oh, my gosh. Episode 2. 3 or 4 episodes later, I was like, okay, I should probably study.
What season are you in?
Only season 2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So still way back. But I just want to get caught up so that you and me and Tom can watch season 5.
Well, I haven't seen anything past season 2.
Cool. Well, we can watch 3 together sometime.
And 4.
Okay. Yeah. You know what? Maybe it's not feasible this year. We'll figure it out. But
anyways.
Yeah. I think Kid Fisto is a pretty lit Jedi, though.
Kid Fisto
would be
cool.
Like my number 2 or 3.
Yeah, you always lie. I remember, like,
remember
as a kid.
I just think
always...
he's cool.
Yeah.
But also, like, he can breathe underwater. He's a total stud.
That's kind of crazy.
The way he went out was absolutely unfair to him.
So lame.
So lame. Yeah.
That caused some tension. You know, I wanted to go fight George Lucas for it.
Oh, yeah. Revenge of the Sith. But to be honest,
Revenge of the Sith is still a good movie. But...
I saw it in theaters this year. It's incredible.
Bunch of Jedi.
That might be, like the second or third. That's probably the third best Star Wars movie.
You know, the Lord of the Rings Extended Edition are coming out to theaters this year.
Oh my gosh, did they ever come out in theaters?
I don't think so.
This is the first? Okay, dude, seeing Lord of the Rings in theaters is crazy. We got to watch one of those together.
I know.
Are all 3 of them?
Yeah, I think for some theaters are doing a marathon.
No. You need to buy a sleeping bag. Heck, man, you got to bring a whole like steak dinner and probably like pack some, pack some smoothies. And I keep talking about smoothies for breakfast, but...
So to swing back to the topic.
Right.
So let's
freaking build a tent in that theater. Let me put up like a double decker couch. All right, keep going. Look, this is how they go, bro. You gotta be flexible. I'm buying you time because I know you don't have anything to say.
No, I do. I was gonna ask while we named top 3 things. What are your top 3 pet peeves? And how do you go about responding to them when they surface?
In the abstract?
No, in reality.
No. I mean, sorry. Like, could they be particular pet peeves for particular people?
That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I won't name any people, but let's see.
Because I think this
go
is...
back and forth.
Awareness is... I think a stepping stone, like a fundamental first step in sanctification. Like if you're not aware of where you need to improve, then you will just simply not. And pet peeves seem to be almost like an socially acceptable thing. Like, oh, everyone's allowed to be annoyed by certain things. Like,
but,
oh, what are your pet peeves? But
right.
what are the things that annoy you that like maybe say something about where you need to grow?
That's actually a great point. It's so funny. Sorry, before we get to the particular pet peeves, I love that you said that they're socially acceptable. They shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But just because they're common doesn't mean like, or just because we all have them doesn't mean we should allow them to fester within ourselves. And I think that's this weird social tendency to, that it's okay for us ourselves to have super high standards for what we expect from everybody else.
Yeah. Like I told you that. We judge other people by their actions and ourselves by our intentions.
Yeah.
So my intentions are always good, even if the action wasn't bad. Whereas,
right.
Their action is horrible, even if maybe they actually had a good intention.
Yeah, because you don't see their intentions.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You just, yeah. And like, there's people will comfortably, confidently, and I would even say proudly, mention the things that tick them off or the things that they expect from other people. Like, well, I can't stand when people do this, or I can't stand when people do that, or like, oh my gosh, I absolutely lose it when people are late or whatever it is. And you're like, well, you know, you could say that proudly for sure. Or maybe that means you should get a life. Maybe that means you should like grow in some form of virtue or just stop being an idiot and stop being so sensitive. So like there, yes. Should we all strive to not totally tick each other off? Yes. Absolutely. But should we also not try to be like take things personally and like not be super sensitive?
I mean,
sensitive?
That's a huge
we
part
this
of
culture
that
of sensitivity. Like you take it to the next level in our modern culture, psychology has added a whole new layer of it where people have all sorts of personal psychological needs and issues. Like,
yeah.
Well, okay, I'm OCD, so if someone has like their shoelaces untied, like that I absolutely drives me up a wall. It's like, well, yeah, you can say you're OCD or you could just look away from the shoelaces and like choose not to be a horrible person.
I have asymptomatic Tourette.
What is that? Like you're just like spazzing internally?
Like, okay, oh, so what? It's from this clip I saw. The teacher's like, okay, what is that? It's like, are you asking out of ignorance or are you asking to really know?
That's
and,
crazy.
He's like, what? And he goes, okay, so asymptomatic, you know what Tourette's is? Yeah. So it's like all of that, but without any of the tics, but with all of like the mental pressure.
Wow.
Because, so
being like a normal person,
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just...
Right, because that's the thing,
it's a comedy to, like, show, right. like, how ridiculous people get.
Because that's... I'm not denying that, like, there's legitimate... Like, people might legitimately experience things like OCD or various, you know, additional psychological factors that make them more prone to, like, you know, be bothered by things. It's fair. But those terms get so overused now.
Yeah.
And, or, like...
Yeah, yeah. Like, to the detriment of people who actually have them.
Right. Exactly. To the detriment of people who actually have them. Say, like... you claim to have ADHD and really you don't. It's just you probably spent a little bit too much time scrolling through reels. So you've
created.
Forced yourself to have a very low attention span or inability to sit still. And because of that, like, you have a pet peeve of, say, people going on too long or talking too long. And you're like, I'm sorry, I just can't focus on your point. It's like, well, actually, that's not a me problem. That's a you problem. Like, maybe you should work on attention span. That exact thing came up this summer. I was talking to a kid, one of the high school kids I was taking care of when I was working at the camp. And I remember, like, he asked a question about music and I started answering, like, I was only like one or two sentences in. And sometimes I can go on talking too long, like, yeah. I am right now. But I was like starting to say, I think it was a question about classical music. And I was like, yeah, I think this would be considered classical music. And this was a little bit, we were listening to some piece of music and he asked about it. I was like, this is a little bit after the phase of Bach. And he's like, okay, I actually wasn't that interested. Like, you can stop talking. Like, I don't want to hear this much about it. And I was like, wow, yo mama didn't spank you enough. Like,
that's super rude.
Like,
too.
But, like, he was peeved. Like, yeah. He had a pet peeve that I had started talking for more than approximately 8 seconds. And it's like, no, sometimes our quote unquote pet peeves are actually just us being overly sensitive, ridiculous idiots. And we just need to stop being idiots. Stop being sensitive. Stop being an idiot. We could just tell ourselves that in the morning every time we go to the bathroom. Before we brush our teeth, we should just tell ourselves,
look,
okay,
in the mirror.
Today, look in the mirror, say...
you know, those, like, affirmations. Like,
yeah.
That's, like, a psychological thing to do right. for people who are, like, who have self-confidence
yeah,
issues.
Yeah, be like, you're the
declare
greatest.
Declare self-affirmations yeah. yourself in the mirror.
Yeah.
But this one's, like, self-defamation.
At least self-encouragement, yeah. self-exhortations. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Be like, yeah, you
Don't
know what?
Idiot.
Stop being an idiot. If people tick you off, it's a you problem. You need to get the heck over, you know, as they say, cry a river of tears, build a bridge, and get the heck over it.
I love that line. Anyways,
I so I'm sorry.
That,
so after all that,
should we talk about pet peeves now?
Well, no, because it's good to acknowledge that. Yeah, we do have these idiotic functions of our mind where we are overly sensitive to little things other people do. And one of mine, it's silly, but it is actually when people chew while talking, or I guess they talk with their mouth full of food, whatever, however you want to say it. And I've done it occasionally too. I work pretty hard to not do it, but for whatever reason, it grosses me out. So, and I remember there were a couple of times when you were younger where you would intentionally try to gross me out by you'd be chewing through carrots. And yeah, you do that, which already the sound alone just makes me want to just blow my own brains out with a shotgun. But when you add to it, seeing the carrots, like particularly I remember being carrots, just the diced up, chewed up, orange remains of a carrot stick just lolling around in your mouth mixed with the saliva and everything.
I think he threw something. I wanted to die.
And I wanted him to die. And that's just a pet peeve right now. What about you?
Dude, that's so funny.
I wanted both of us to die together.
I have a monastic pet peeve, okay. Which is people going too fast or too slow while we're reciting the Psalms.
Mm-hmm.
After being explicitly told so many times, keep to the pace of, like, you know, it's just...
For sure.
So, yeah. So there's that one.
There's a rhythm.
And I just want to, like, throw them out the window. I've actually sometimes, like, I've imagined, like, this is, you know, some admission of
fantasies
my own
self. Defenestration. Yeah.
I've thought about, like, if I had a button in front of me that, like... the choir stall where they're sitting, like,
ejected,
oh. And or like went down and they fell into like a rancor pit.
Of course, it's a rancor. Of course, it's not just like a little hole, but it's something with a devastating monster
like,
that would devour them.
And I'm like, wow, I like deleted like half of the side over there.
You thought about how many you would delete?
Yeah. I asked the abbot if one time if he wouldn't mind if we
told him about this fantasy.
Yeah, I told him about that, and he said he'll install a power board in my choir stall next week.
Wow.
But no, I asked him, like, you know, what if a way to like correct people's errors in choir was just we all had to wear shock collars. And then whenever someone messed up, I'm like, so every now and then when someone messes up, he looks at me and just goes.
Your Abbott is so unserious. It's awesome. He's the greatest, bro.
So I did that. But no, like a more pet peeve that's like across the board is someone interrupting me like while making like if someone interrupts you during like kind of a goofy conversation or whatever, or like you interrupting the podcast. That's like the nature of the podcast, you know, like I don't
for sure.
But when someone actually this it's more let's say someone's like kind of talking like they're maybe the
like let's say it was like Thursday morning this past week at like theoretically like 10:15 a.m. and there's one guy I'm just kidding
we're at a table and someone's telling a story and they're like, oh, that's great, you know, and like we're all laughing, we all enjoy it,
sure,
and I have a similar story, a story I want to share, and it's all quiet, and I start sharing the story, and then someone immediately, even though we all listen to this person, someone else immediately cuts me off and like, yeah, okay, and then just like goes back to telling the
story. They're the moderator for the whole conversation.
And I've experienced it seems like, and maybe, you know, when we look for something, we find more evidence of it.
For sure.
It seemed like in a lot of conversations I've had with a group of friends that everyone seems to be willing to pay their attention to one person, but as soon as like I start speaking, everyone's like, oh, okay. And then just kind of like
dismissing.
They all turn to like their drink or they turn to their phone or like someone interrupts and like goes somewhere else.
Deflating feeling.
Yeah. And to me, what I turn it into isn't so much as like, oh, like everyone's tired. It's like, oh, they don't want to listen to me. They don't like me.
It's hard not to. That's not like,
But I think the pet peeve of it is that I almost. I almost like expect it to happen, so I like work myself up to get angry about it. Oh yeah,
then when it happens, it's confirmed, exactly. Right? That's all the. Oh,
and it could probably, it might happen less than it does than it doesn't. But I see that, you know. So I don't know. I guess I don't know if that's a pet peeve, but it certainly bothers me, and it makes me resent those people.
Yeah.
And then if I don't want to get over it, now it has become my problem.
Yeah, right. And then it sticks with you way longer. And even if it was done in some kind of mean-spiritedness on their part, it still was probably only in their minds for a second and then dismissed. But for you, it might stay in your head for days.
Right. Oh, here's a better pet peeve, actually.
Okay.
Is when I have told someone something truthful that they've asked, like, hey, am I this? Like, am I selfish or am I, like, dumb or am I unattractive or, you know, what like a whole plethora of things or am I a good friend? And I've affirmed, like, yeah, no, you genuinely are.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, a week later, they come back and say, oh, I don't think that's true. And it's like, okay, so did you think I was lying to you?
Mm-hmm.
Or is my word just not good for you?
Sure, sure. No.
And whenever someone needs to, like, have what I think is something that just seems obviously true to me repeated over and over and over and over and over again to them, it's like, just stop asking me to tell you then. Because I told you, and you either don't trust me or you won't trust anyone on this, and you actually want me to tell you that the lie is true, and I'll never tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of me, like you said earlier about like trying to understand them, like, okay, there's got to be something way deeper than them asking this question.
Yeah.
There's another question. I get so annoyed, I'm like, I don't even care, you know?
Yeah.
And that now that's my problem, right? Because now I'm just like, I get immediately annoyed instead of like, okay, let's try to dive into like why this person might be asking this more.
Yeah.
Or maybe this is the question they can ask
mm-hmm.
because they don't know how to ask the other one.
Right.
And they're hoping me to get to that mm-hmm. because they don't know how to get to it.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So anyways, another pet peeve of mine is monologuing when someone doesn't have anything good to say. And I feel like that's what I'm doing.
No, you're good. You're good.
So
I think we don't need to keep listing these endlessly, but
anyways, so how do we, I guess if you give a 1 minute or a 2 minute, like approach to like allowing, like looking at this from a side of sanctity and like growth and holiness,
mm-hmm.
what are these opportunities then? Or what is all of this in light of faith or in light of holiness?
Yeah, well, for one thing, it's opportunity to grow in the virtue of patience. And people think patience is like waiting in line with a smile on your face or something. Like people, the term patience is so watered down that like, well, just be patient. It basically just means like, you know, don't lose your cool while you're waiting. But really patience just means being able to endure something painful.
Endurance produces proven character.
Exactly.
Right.
Patience literally comes from the Latin word for patior, meaning
to suffer.
Yep. So,
bless
you. Excuse me. Literally, if you pray for patience, you pray to grow in patience. That just literally means, whether
God,
you realize it or not,
suffer.
Lord, let me suffer more. And so God will answer that prayer, sometimes whether you've asked for it really or not, by allowing you to grow in patience through giving you... Excuse me.
I have to really be patient now.
Through giving you opportunities to suffer, and it mostly and often will happen in the form of other people. Mm-hmm. So your pet peeves or the irritations you experience from other people, they're going to give you opportunities to suffer, and thereby they're going to give you opportunities to grow in patience. And that's an enormous virtue. Patience is not just a cute virtue. There's a lot of cute virtues, I think, nowadays of like, oh, like be nice.
Yeah.
Like be tolerant, be friendly, be patient. Like there are all these sort of cute things that we would tell a seven-year-old to do. Be patient while you're waiting for us to open the cookie jar and give you your cookies.
Yeah, right.
That's not what it's about. Patience is an incredible virtue. It's a virtue of great heroism because, bless you, it is contagious. Patience, if it's a virtue of suffering well, that is the virtue that our Lord was relying on as he carried the cross up to Calvary. So like in his most pivotal, most glorious, and most painful moment of his life, patience had to have been one of the most significant virtues that was going on. So this is, again, imitating our Lord is the way to become a saint, the way to reach heaven, and especially imitating our Lord's passion is the way to reach the resurrection. And so the way to that is patience. Pet peeves, interacting with the people that rub us the wrong way, having tension in family dynamics and in community dynamics, all of these are ways to grow in patience. Not through some abstract like, well, like we hope we feel a good thing, but simply literally in the very act of suffering the painful experience, admittedly they're painful,
enduring it
and choosing to love the other person regardless and pray for them.
Yeah.
That's all it means. It doesn't mean you have to feel good. Patience doesn't mean feeling great. It just means
very few virtues actually feel good.
Exactly. Patience doesn't mean like feel good even though you're waiting or something bad's happening. It means exactly feel bad and let yourself feel bad and still choose to love it anyway.
And that's so my final word will be, you know, in this place, like when the same people are constantly annoying us or like that breaks us down. And, holding on to resentment or holding on to like, oh, let that person bugs me or anger, like that is painful for us to experience, yet we choose to experience it.
Yeah.
So I think the question kind of in these places is, when will the pain of changing be more worth it than the pain of staying the same?
Yeah. That's
like
good.
The pain of going through the suffering of patience, when is that more worth it than the pain of just always being bitter?
Yeah. Yeah, because life is going to be painful regardless. Yeah. You don't get to choose whether or not that's going to happen.
Yes. You don't get to choose like that. You're in suffering, but you can choose like how you suffer.
Exactly.
Like suffer well or suffer poorly, you know, positive or negative suffering.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, well,
so that,
thanks for suffering with us.
Exactly. And look at yourself in the mirror every morning and say, don't be an idiot. You know, you're not that important. Like,
yeah, you're not that special.
Your standards of life, your standards of what you demand from everybody else, you're not all that. It's not that significant. And so don't take yourself too seriously. That's the other one too. People take themselves so seriously. We're encouraged societally to take ourselves seriously.
Without a God, I'm a God. So I got to be as perfect as possible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that means not only I got to be perfect, but that means I have to demand perfection from other people. And I'm justified to do so because they owe it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody owes you anything. We don't need to be sensitive. We don't need to be idiots. We just need to try to be holy and loving in spite of the fact that sometimes people are super annoying.
But our tagline might be, don't be sensitive. Don't be an idiot.
Yeah.
So
allow annoyance to sanctify you.
There you go. Live in the rock tumbler. Don't try to jump out of it.
Yeah, I like that. So, I like that.
Well, thanks for joining us for another episode of All Good in the Brotherhood podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. If you did, share it with someone else. If it annoyed you, share it with someone else. And sure. Glad to have Nate back on in person. Yeah. Live. We'll be circling back hopefully soon with an all sibling podcast talking about our Christmas traditions.
Yeah, we won't talk about Christmas 2018. Yeah, I can tell you that.
That would be wild.
Speaking of Christmas traditions,
if you're curious how the monks celebrate Christmas and the Christmas traditions we have, you should check out this video right here. And if you missed our Advent episode from last year and you still want to squeak in some good quality prayer and spirituality of Advent before it's done, you can check out this podcast episode that we did.
Look down there.
Right there. So,
and speaking of pet peeves, my pet peeve is when you ask someone an interesting question and they don't reciprocate. So I'll just tell you who my other favorite Jedi are. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay.
We'll end. Yeah, we'll cut it off.
All right. Well, thanks. Sorry. And we'll talk to you later.
It's okay. Bye. I'm not even bitter.